Well, hello, everybody, and welcome into episode one of the Young Lads Podcast. Pierre Duffy here with you, alongside Harris Eisenberg. We'll get into why we named ourselves the Young Lads in just a little bit, but this is basically just going to be a baseball podcast that Harris and I have been wanting to do for quite some time. Harris, we finally started it. You're in Peoria. I'm back in Tampa. We're finally starting this thing out.
Yeah, I think this is something you mentioned to me like the third day I got down to Tampa last year. It was like, I'm all in on doing a podcast. Talked about it in October for a little bit. Was lucky to come down to Tampa just for a brief little trip in March, and we kind of discussed it further. And now that I got some downtime, and I know you do as well, here we are. So this is exciting. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be a baseball podcast. We're obviously going to be talking a lot about the MLB, especially two guys that used to work with the Tampa Bay Rays. They're off to a great start, but you know, you're big into college baseball. I'm trying to get more into college baseball now that I'm actually not playing it anymore. So I got a couple of names on the top of my head that if you want to talk about them, we can, because I think they're going to be major players, not only in this year's draft, but you know, just going forward, I think we're going to be seeing their names a whole lot. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm pretty interested to see where this is going to go, especially with the video aspect of it. First of all, how's Peoria going? Let's start with that, because you are the number two broadcaster for the Peoria Chiefs, the single-A team for the St. Louis Cardinals. How's that going?
It's been going pretty well. Getting off to a good start. It's the weather's weird. Last week it was 85 degrees and needed a bunch of sunscreen, and yesterday it was 40 and it was snowing. So a little weird. People are great. Teams well. We just won 5 of 6. Definitely a little bit of an adjustment from what I'm used to, from where I come from, you know, mainly doing ESPN Plus stuff. But no, it's been great. Affiliated ball is kind of something that I always wanted to get into from the start. And yeah, we're finally here. So yeah, in Peoria, it's an interesting little town, but I think it's a good start.
I see you still got your Yankees flag, though, in the background, so you're still repping New York. I mean, they just lost their first series of the year to the Toronto Blue Jays, but then again, it's the Toronto Blue Jays. It's not like it was the Cincinnati Reds or anybody like that.
Yeah, you know, when you have guys injured often, like the Yankees have right now, you know, Giancarlo Stanton's out, Josh Donaldson's out, you know, you got Willie Calhoun and Franchy Cordero in the heart of your lineup. No offense to those guys, and I'm a big Franchy fan, but Franchy Cordero shouldn't be hitting sixth on the New York Yankees. That's just, I think we can all agree on that.
And I think a lot of our audience too is going to know this name when I say it out, but John Boy, I saw a tweet the other day when they put IKF in center field. He kind of tweeted out like, did IKF just DFA Aaron Hicks? Because apparently he's been playing pretty well in center field, and they actually moved Aaron Hicks to left field.
IKF's been making some plays. And I mean, you look at the guy and you're like, you know, he's your typical infielder. He's 5'11". I think that's being nice. And he goes out in center because he really has no more role in the infield because Volpe's in town and you got to put LeMahieu somewhere. And this dude's making plays. And I'm like, yeah, great. I mean, listen, there are a lot of IKF haters. I am not one of them. I think IKF has done nothing wrong to deserve a lot of hate. I mean, he's no Anthony Volpe, obviously. But you stick him in a spot where he can succeed. And, you know, he did a good job in center. So we'll see what happens there. And, you know, Aaron Hicks, I mean, it's been a year and a half of just bad baseball, buddy. We gotta put a move on.
And there's still, what, 3 years left in that contract? 4 years left in that contract?
I think so. I remember when he signed it and everyone was like, oh, such a steal. And it was at the time. And then it's just, ooh-wee.
What do you think is a worse contract? Aaron Hicks or Jacoby Ellsbury?
Oh, wow.
Both were coming off of good years. Jacoby Ellsbury probably could have won MVP in 2011. If the Red Sox just don't have that epic collapse in the second half of the season. But then you signed that contract with the Yankees and he played what? All of not even 200 games with them? And they just got off his contract?
Yeah. That's a tough question, honestly. Because, like, Jacoby Ellsbury just, like, It's not like Jacoby Ellsbury was awful. He just couldn't stay healthy, and he was just very, very average when he was a Yankee. I think his best year was 2015, and he hit like 280. So he wasn't awful. Even on the 2017 team, when we still had him on the playoff roster, like he still had a role as a pinch runner. And then obviously the last 3 years of his deal, he wasn't healthy. So like obviously the Ellsbury deal sucks because he wasn't healthy. The Aaron Hicks deal sucks because Aaron Hicks is just bad. that's a serious problem. Granted, the Ellsbury deal, we were paying him a lot more. Hicks is like, you know, it's $10 million a year, so it's not awful. But, I mean, the dude's got to get a grip. Like, last year, we were sitting at the Trop, and it's a road game for the Yankees, and they're booing Hicks more than the Rays fans are booing Yankee players. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, both of those contracts are going to go down as one of the worst contracts for Yankees fans. I mean, you could kind of, I guess, look at Giancarlo's contract, but he's still been giving you 30 and 80 at least in good years. And
yeah, been a great playoff performer. Like, I don't have a problem with the deal. I know it's mega money, but we all knew when he got traded here that he wasn't hitting 59 home runs again. Like, it's not even possible. Granted, I know Judge hit 62 last year, but you can't have that expectation that he's going to hit 60 bombs every year. So, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, Yankees are a little below in the standings right now in the AL East, and I think we can we'll do a little transition into the Rays, I guess, you know, off to a really good start. But before we start with the Rays, I think we should get into the two of us, how we met, how we ended up working with the Rays. How our fandom of the team still stands. I know, believe me, I listen to Andy and Neil all the time still. So I'll start with you being the local boy down there. How'd it happen?
Yeah, so originally I'm from Fort Lauderdale, so I was a Marlins fan for a little bit. And then when I moved up here when I was 6 years old, we started going to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays baseball games and just fell in love with, you know, the likes of Scott Kazmir and Carl Crawford and BJ Upton. And I could, at one point, I probably can't do it now, but at one point I could name the entire 2008 starting lineup top to bottom, who was batting first, second, third, whatever. But just, you know, been a fan of them for the longest time. I was actually at the game against the Minnesota Twins when they clinched their first ever postseason appearance. So a lot of the videos that start with that, with Evan Longoria going down the left field line, catching the ball in foul territory, I was sitting up in the upper deck. This is when they had the 300 level open, and I was on that left field foul line and watching him catch that. That was the only time I've ever seen Scott Kazmir pitch to. That's my favorite baseball player. I've only seen him ever pitch one time in person. So it was a great experience. But anyways, So fast forward to, I'm in college. I'm getting my graduate assistant's degree, I'm a graduate assistant getting my master's degree, I should say. And I saw that the Rays were looking for an internship. I applied in like September, October of 2021, and I didn't hear back from them until like February of 2022. And I didn't even remember that I applied to them until, you know, Chris called us, our boss, Chris Miller, called me and was like, "Hey, this is Chris Miller with the Tampa Bay Rays. Are you still interested in the internship?" And like, I couldn't even get the word yes out of my mouth fast enough. So, you know, I had to wait a little bit because of the lockout. I didn't know the exact time and date that I was going to start with the Rays, but, you know, it was just a great experience. So working with them, working with the late, great Dave Wills, Andy Freed was in the booth too. And now Neil Solons has been promoted to that play-by-play guy. But, it was just a great experience. And that's how I got my start with the Rays. And, you know, I still love them to this day. I was actually at the game on Saturday and called Randy's walk-off. So that was pretty cool.
There you go. Yeah, and I mean, the lockout helped me. You know, I was finishing up undergrad. Spring 2022 came around. Kind of had something lined up. It was taking a little while. So, you know, I think, and we'll touch on this as the podcast goes on, just cause we're two guys just, you know, aspiring to be you know, working in the big leagues one day at the broadcast level, you know, you're still open to anything. So late April comes around. I saw that the Rays broadcasting internship was open for applications. And I was like, huh, that's a little late, but okay. You know, why not give it a shot? I think like 2 weeks later, I was out on the golf course and I put my phone down to go hit my tee shot, came back, and there was a voicemail from a St. Petersburg, Florida number. And it was our buddy Francisco from HR. And I was like, oh my God, like I got to call this person back. I was golfing with my professors at the time. And I was like, what do I do? He was like, call them now. So he ended up calling me back the next day. Set it up. I got there later than Peter. I ended up getting there in June. But yeah, it was awesome working with all those guys. I mean, you know, now with what I'm doing here in Peoria, I kind of take aspects of what all three of those guys brought to us and bring that into what I do now. Just not only the broadcast side of it, but the way you carry yourself as a pro, I think is what really stood out from them. It was great. You know, I came in June, so it was a little weird, you know, new guy, middle of the season, this group, you know, the Rays radio broadcasting group is so tight, and you come in and you're like, you know, how do you interact with all these people? Cause I come from High Point University where I was there for 5 years, and you know, our core of people that we have in athletics is awesome. We're super close. And you know, you try to formulate that everywhere you go, and it took a couple weeks, but once I got an in with you guys, I mean, it was awesome. It was super cool. And, very thankful for that experience, you know, still stay in touch with those guys. And now, as the late great Dave Wills always called us, the young lads, which is hence the name for the podcast. And, now we're here doing it, with inspiration from those guys.
Yeah. And I remember when I first like joined on with the Rays, it was, I think I missed the first week of spring training. And then, you know, I kind of asked like, hey, like, is there going to be another intern? Cause I thought I was the only person. And they were like, well, you know, somebody was supposed to join on, but then, you know, he got a different job. And then like 2 weeks after that, it was supposed to be a girl that was coming on with us, but she kind of, to use the words that we use today, ghosted the Rays, basically. It was just like, didn't answer any of the calls and wasn't, you know, was very wishy-washy about if she wanted to start the job. And then all of a sudden they were like, yeah, we finally got an intern to say yes. And they said your name and they were like, he's from, you know, High Point, and he's done games all over the place. And I think it was the Northwood games. No. What league were you in?
Yeah, Northwoods League. Two summers.
Northwoods. That's what Chris said. Yeah. And I was just like, all right, let's see where this goes. And I mean, once you joined on, it was like we just hit the ground running. It was the greatest 3 months ever. And then Becca came on and we were just like the three musketeers going to all the watch parties and just having the most fun. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
Driving the van
everywhere.
When
she came on in July, those 3 months. Yeah. Those 3 months were awesome. I mean, I remember driving the van. I almost killed you. Like the third time.
Yeah.
The thing. You still remember that?
We were going, I forgot where we were going, but you were making a left turn.
Somewhere in Seminole.
You just decided to go like right when a car was like 10 feet from passing us. And I'm just like, oh God.
I remember saying sending and you were like, Harris, no, what the heck?
Cause of course it would have hit my side. It would have hit your side.
I know. No, but that was fun. You know, when Becca came on, like that office, and then you guys caught on to the New York accent at times, like that whole little like cluster of people that were there in the office, like we just had a ball with like the questions of the day, some of the stupid stuff that we would say too. I mean,
Every time there was orange chicken, dude. Oh my God. I still remember that day too, where as soon as they put out the fresh bin of orange chicken, you just got out of your seat as soon as possible. And I almost just spit all my food on Becca because I was trying to chew or I was eating, and you just like launched yourself out of the seat, and like it was one of the funniest things that happened last
year. That's gotta be my favorite It's got to be my favorite line that Dave mentioned on the broadcast last year, because Dave always liked to poke fun at us, especially when it came to media dining. Because, you know, we're two kids. Like, we never got to experience that before. Like, I was 21 at the time. I think, what were you, 23, 24?
Yeah, I was 24.
So I run up and grab the chicken and, like, yeah. And then in the fifth inning, they're like, you know, a couple guys out, Rays need a pinch runner, and I got an idea for you. And just starts spewing about, like, sweet and sour. Oh, he goes, all I would do is put Harris Eisenberg at first base and tell him that there's sweet and sour chicken at home plate. That's how fast I got up out of the seat to go get it. I mean, it was spectacular. So every time I eat orange chicken, which I actually did the other day, I always think back to that moment, because that was funny. That was really cool.
Dave would love to talk about how he would try to get, like, the wrinkles out of our shirts during press dining. And then I remember my mom texted me. She was like, how much food did you have? And I text, because we were all in a group chat, I text the guys and I was like, well, at least you have one listener. And they actually brought it up on the air. They were like, oh, Peter Jr.'s mom is listening in. And yes, he did have a lot to eat today. So you don't have to worry about feeding him when he goes home.
Yeah, I tuned in at spring training and I put something out on Twitter about, like, how I really got the kick for sweet and sour listening to you guys. And Dave goes, yeah, you know, I got three places within half a block of the hotel that Harris Eisenberg would love right now. And this is after I wasn't an employee of the Rays anymore. So just really cool. And again, it goes to show just, like, how tight the group is. You know, I was texting with Neil back and forth, I think last night. Neil, you still haven't replied to my latest text. Please do. Yeah, you know, we're a close group. And I'm actually going to – I plan on going up to Wrigley in May to try and see him. So – yeah, that's kind of how we got our start with the Rays. A little short span of time with them, you could say, but it was a blast. And, you know, we'll continue on with that as the podcast goes on. But let's get into those Rays. I mean, what a start. I mean, who would have thought this would happen? You go into spring training and you're like, it's basically the same roster. You just added Zach Eflin. Your three of your starters are hurt. I know Eflin just got reinstated off the IL, I think it was yesterday. But, you know, Springs is now out due to Tommy John. Glass now hasn't pitched a game this year. And they haven't missed a beat. I mean, it really is amazing, the turnaround from watching the postseason, the wild card series last year, where it seemed like they just couldn't buy a hit, to now it's like it just comes in bunches. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you score one run in 24 innings in the wild card series, and all of a sudden you have – you broke the record for the most home runs most consecutive games to start a season with a home run. You got a run differential of almost 100 they're basically the complete opposite of the A's, because the A's have now have a run differential of negative 100. The Rays almost have a run differential of plus 100. So it's like this, and they didn't do anything with the offense. People thought that maybe they tried to sign somebody, you know, a left-handed power bat like a Joey Gallo. He goes to Minnesota. You think maybe they'll bring back David Peralta. He goes to L.A. You think maybe they'll take a flyer on a Jason Hay where he goes to L.A. There was just – they didn't do anything other than just say, hey, Luke Raley, try to hit some more home runs for us. Now he's been a little bit of a cold streak these last couple of games now. But, I mean, to start the season, he was one of the best hitters in that lineup. You got Harold Ramirez, who hit six home runs all of last year. He's already had five after yesterday's home run. I mean, but it's just you have guys healthy. Wander's healthy. Josh Lowe has become Josh Lowe that we thought he was going to be last year, or at least they thought the Rays thought he was going to be last year when they traded Austin Meadows away to the Tigers. Isak Paredes has kind of had a little bit of a down couple of weeks now, but I mean, Randy's just, from what he did at the WBC with Team Mexico, he's just come and done that tenfold. And then, I mean, you have guys like Christian Bethencourt and Jose Siri that are in that lineup, too, that can just, you know, go and get you a couple of knocks. Bethencourt hit a home run in Friday's game that helped the Rays win that game with Brandon Lau's home run. And Brandon Lau's healthy, too. That was the big thing last year, was just that Wander was out for a long time with the hammock bone and the quad injury. Brandon Lau missed the rest of the season with a bad back. Mike Zunino, who's now with the Cleveland Guardians, you know, had thoracic outlet syndrome. you know, you just had everybody was just dropping, and you had a 4A team on the field at some points, and now it's just you're healthy. And you got a couple of guys that are not only contending for all-star spots right now, but, you know, you got a guy in Randy Arozarena and maybe even Wander Franco that, you know, right now could look like front runners for MVP votes, or at least get some type of MVP votes. And then, you like you said, with the starting rotation, it's a shame that Springs went down because he started the year so great. But you still got Shane McClanahan pitching like an ace. You still got Rasmussen, who's doing really well. And then Taj Bradley has been one of those guys that, like, we thought he was going to come up in maybe September. You know, September call-ups, he could be that 14th pitcher added to the roster, but he's come up and he's going to make another start for the Astros, so we'll see how, or against the Astros, so we'll see how he does. But, I mean, the pitching staff has just stayed healthy. Fairbanks just broke the franchise record for scoreless innings. You got Jason Adam, who, besides the home run the other day against, I think that was Gavin Sheets of the White Sox that tied it up. But, I mean, the bullpen has just been incredible. And the Rays are finally healthy like they should be.
The pitching's always been the strength of the team. I think we saw that last year. I mean, going into the season, people would ask me, you know, who's, like, got the best rotation? And easily, rotation and bullpen, I'd put the Tampa Bay Rays up there, I think, with they're the best in the league. I really do believe that. They got the depth. You know, when guys got hurt, even last year, like, look at Garen Clevenger. I mean, he was essentially just a random pickup at the deadline, and it looked like a minor league for minor leaguer trade at the time. They bring him up, and he was great, and he still is. You know, he's pitching really well out of the pen, too, so they're able to just implement these guys in a flash, and they've done a great job. But the hitting, you know, I remember Dave and Andy always talking about last year how, you know, COVID kind of screwed up some of the development of guys like Josh Lowe and Taylor Walls, how they never really got a full minor league season to develop at like the AAA level. I feel like last year was kind of that year where they were lucky enough to develop at the big league level. They just got criticism for it because you're not supposed to be developing in the big leagues. You know, now that it's 2023 and Josh Lowe played some substantial big league games. I mean, Taylor Walls last year, I think, played 140 games or something last year because Wander was out for so long. And Walls has been great this year. I saw against Cincinnati, he hit homers from both sides of the plate. You know, he's been producing. So, you know, the hitting's on. Like, we know they're going to hit for average. Like, Harold's been really good, obviously. And Randy, you know, we were talking about last year how Randy deserved some MVP votes last year. And he's must-watch TV. Like, I don't care what anyone says. Like, this dude, he's good for the game. When you're talking about guys, you want to make the game shorter and you want entertainment. I mean, Randy Arozarena is pure entertainment. So I know not many people watch the Rays. You might now because they're doing so well. Randy's the guy to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been the guy to watch ever since he played for Team Mexico in March. So, I mean, you saw how hot he was to start that tournament in Phoenix. And then now he's just starting the season off hot again for the Rays. And hopefully he can keep it going. We haven't seen the stolen bases yet because he keeps hitting all these home runs, so he doesn't have a chance for stolen bases. But, you know, he could vie for another 2020 season, if not maybe a 30-30 season. He's got, what, 6 home runs, 7 home runs already? And then, you know, you got guys like Yandy Diaz, who I didn't even mention in my first little spiel about him, but he's hitting for average. He had a little bit of a scare on Saturday where he was dehydrated and his heart was racing, but he was back in the lineup yesterday. But this is, you know, that's your leadoff hitter. And we're talking about a leadoff hitter that's 6'2", 250, that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. He's not your prototypical leadoff hitter, but he's one of those staples in the lineup. When you have guys like Yandy, Brandon Lau, Wander Franco, and Randy Arozarena as your top four, and then you could fill that bottom five out with Josh Lowe, Bethancourt, a Jose Siri, a Luke Raley, guys like that, it gets your lineup a lot deeper. And it just it helps, you know, score runs. Like, they didn't score runs last year because none of these guys stayed healthy in the lineup, and now we're finally starting to see. Now, granted, I know they played the Detroit Tigers and the Washington Nationals and the Oakland Athletics, but, I mean, besides the Oakland Athletics, after they played the Tigers went to the Houston Astros and took 2 out of 3. And I mean, I know they lost 2 out of 3 to Toronto Blue Jays, but this is still a really good team that's showcasing what it could do. And it's 19-3 for a reason. I mean, the White Sox are one of the disappointing teams to start the season so far, but they're 19-2. They're 19-3 for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Cease is one of the better pitchers in baseball, and he only lasted 4 innings, I mean, which was really impressive. It felt like last year, every time a big-time starter came in, like, it was like, good night, game's over. This year, it's totally different, and you're right, you know, and Brandon Lau is fully healthy. People are forgetting, 2021, when he was healthy, dude hit 39 home runs. You get that production from a healthy Brandon Lau this year? Oh, my. Like, You're fiending for that if you're a Rays fan.
I mean, if you can get 2021-ish Brandon Lau back, I don't say, you know, he doesn't have to hit 39 home runs, but if you can get 30 home runs from him and he can drive in 90 RBIs and you get 140 games out of Wander and Randy and Yandy and, you know, Jose Siri maybe 130-ish, I don't see how this team doesn't win 90 plus games. I mean, they're on pace for 136 right now. That's not going to happen, obviously. But I don't see how this team, you know, doesn't go out and win 95, maybe even another 100 win season like they did in 2021. But I mean, it's always going to start and end with the starters in the bullpen. But if the offense can produce like this on a nightly basis for the rest of the year, this is going to be a really good Rays team and probably rival teams like 2010, 2012, those really good offensive output teams that the Rays had.
Yeah, I mean, they're off to a good start. It's must-watch TV and excited to see what they do. I know they're here in, well, I shouldn't say here because it's so far from where I am, but they're up in Chicago this upcoming weekend to play the White Sox. So definitely looking forward to seeing them locally here, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they got the Astros coming today. They actually just released their lineup now with Yandy leading off. If I can unlock my phone, it doesn't want to. Here we go. So they got the Astros for 3 starting today. They got Taj Bradley going in one of these games. And then I know Jose Siri. I don't know how he felt yesterday. I didn't really look at Topkin's tweets because he's usually on that with the injured guys, but. You know, Jose Siri should be coming back. You got Taj Bradley going in one of these games. You know, the Houston Astros aren't the Houston Astros that they were last year just yet. So if you could take 2 out of 3 from the Astros before you go to Chicago for the White Sox again, who you just swept, you could be looking at, you know, single digits in the loss column for April, which would be extremely... You know, it would be really nice to have going into May.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it's a good start for the boys in the Bay. I think it's a perfect time to transition, and quickly we'll do this because I know they are the most irrelevant team in baseball. But I just want to mention this real quick. The Oakland A's and everything that's gone on with, you know, John Fisher not caring about the team and only caring about moving the team to Vegas because there's no fans and people, I think, are just getting the wrong vibe from what's going on in Oakland. It's not the fans' fault. It's not the fans' fault. I know they only draw 5,000 a night, but they draw 5,000 a night because they play in a dump called the Oakland Coliseum where there's possums living in the concrete. And John Fisher won't commit to putting a good product on the field because the team sucks. When granted, this past decade, the A's have been one of the more common teams to make the playoffs out of the West. So it's not like they haven't been good recently. This is an Oakland team that has had plenty of success over the last 10 years, but this is an ownership issue where John Fisher just does not care. He's moving the team out of Oakland. I know Vegas is pretty much a signature away from being done. And I really do feel bad for the fans. As someone who can connect with fan bases from many parts of the country, I feel really bad for these Oakland fans. You know, when they used to pack that place, that was a passionate fan base. And for me, a tough place to play. Like, you look at some of those first round series they had against Detroit when the A's were rolling out Sonny Gray. Like, that was a hard place to play. Now it's just, you know, why should the fans show up if the owner doesn't care?
Yeah, and I mean, look at the guys that they've given away the last, you know, handful of years. Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, Sean Murphy, Mark Canna. I mean, some of these guys, Josh Donaldson, they traded away to Toronto for Jed Lowry. I mean, some of the trades just haven't worked out, and some of the reasoning behind it has not been good. And I know you want to get something out of return for these guys before they go to free agency, because apparently you don't have a payroll enough, or you don't have a big enough payroll to keep these guys. But at some point, we gotta put a little bit more money into the baseball team and try to put a better product, because it is a AAA team masking as a major league team. I mean, let's just be honest. They have four wins, and one of those wins was a comeback win against Texas Rangers, but that was kind of like a fluke win where they just got something going against the bullpen because they were abysmal the first eight and a half innings. So at some point, you have to put some type of a product on the field. It was the same thing with the Rays for a while. It's like, oh, the fans aren't going to come because they don't put a product on the field. Well, that's changed the last 5 years. You know, you've made moves, you've made signings, you know, you've made trades like getting Randy Arozarena before 2020, you know, Yandy Diaz coming over, you got Harold Ramirez, you got Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows when they came over, Shane Baz. So the Rays are a small market team, but they're trying to play like a big market in a ways where they're trying to hit on a lot of these trades and be competitive. And we've seen that the last 5 years. I think they've missed the postseason once. No, they haven't. The last 4 years they've made the postseason. The last time they missed the postseason was 2018, and they still won 90 games. It's just that the Oakland Athletics won 92 and took the wild card spot.
Yeah, and making it 4 years in a row, 5 years in a row, which the Rays are on track to do, is really hard to do, especially in the AL East. And the A's had a stretch where they were in the playoffs 3 years in a row, which in that division, which, you know, has Houston in it, it's hard to do. And they've had the product on the field. It's just, I saw a bit from Ken Rosenthal the other day on TikTok of how he walked in the clubhouse, and this is April, and with a group that's got some veterans on it. You know, Tony Kemp is there, Ramon Laureano's there, you know, there's a couple veterans on the team, where there's just, you walk into the clubhouse, and there's just no hope, and it's April. It's April. Like, this should be a point in the season where it's time to turn things around or something. Like, this is bad. I just feel bad for the fans. I really do. I saw something on Twitter a little while back about how they're like, they're going to boycott on a game in June, and they're all going to sell the Coliseum out, which I think is great. I think that's awesome. Good for them. It's just, you know, and this is why we're doing this quickly, because, again, we're not out in Oakland. We don't know what's going on. But just the vibe of not wanting to be in Oakland. I mean, look at the professional teams that have left. The Raiders left, which I think that was really the kicker of where, like, oh, my God, like, this is not good. Like, the Raiders are a staple, not just in Oakland, but around the country. Like, I know people from New York that are Raiders fans. And for the Raiders to go, and then the Warriors to go over the bridge to San Fran, it's just like there was an opportunity to save professional sports in Oakland, and they neglected it. It's kind of sad what Oakland has now become and what it's soon to be, a city with zero professional major sports teams.
Yeah, and I mean, real quick, too, before we move on to another subject, they look at what the Athletics have done with their payroll, and then look at what the Angels have done with theirs. They have two of the top three, probably, maybe even two of the top two players in all of baseball. And they've tried to make signings like Josh Hamilton, like Albert Pujols, like Anthony Rendon, that just haven't panned out. And the Athletics have made the postseason five more times since 2012 than the Angels have. The Angels have one postseason appearance since 2012, and they got swept by the Kansas City Royals. So it's like at some point you got to be like, well, if we're competing more than the Angels are and they have two of the greatest players, why are we not trying to put a better product out on the field?
Yeah, totally agree. 100%. I think perfect time to transition to what's up next. I know I got a topic I want to address. It's not team related. So if I may, I'll give it a shout because this could spark a little bit of debate coming from a college pitcher yourself.
Okay.
Rosin has been heavy in the news over the last couple of weeks. Max Scherzer getting suspended. Domingo Germán with that weird long
that
check.
That was weird where they made him wash his hands.
Both, by the way, from Phil Cuzzy, who's a veteran umpire. I think there's been four instances where banned substance has been checked. All of them are by Phil Cuzzy.
Yeah.
Phil, we'd love to
have
you.
There have been four people ejected for banned substances, and all four have been ejected by Phil Cuzzy.
That's right. So kind of weird. I mean, Max Scherzer's a guy who is taking the 10-game suspension. You know, I really looked forward to what he had to say after his start against the Dodgers. And to me, I think for anyone who follows baseball knows Max Scherzer is a pretty trustworthy guy. I agree with what he said to where, you know, he washed it off in front of a rules official who essentially, you have the rule book there, told him what to do. And the fact that, you know, look, rosin's not going away. MLB teams carry dozens of rosin bags with them in the dugout. Like, that's just the thing. You know, Domingo Germán goes out there with rosin and says, no, you got to wash that off. You can only apply it when you're on the mound. But rosin's a legal substance. You know, Scherzer, same thing. Like, the mix of rosin and sweat is going to make that your hand sticky. That's just how it works. You know, and it's not going away. Like, I don't understand why rosin's banned in the dugouts. I don't know why the umpires are strictly enforcing that. A banned substance by any means. It's essentially like saying, oh, we're going to ban it from putting it on in the dugout, but you can only use it on the mound, which is weird, essentially considering COVID 2020, 2021, you had to bring your own rosin bags out to the mound anyways, because they were still doing checks at the time. So wanted to get your thoughts on it. I think the Scherzer suspension and MLB's being super strict with it because Scherzer was like, oh, you know, I would have appealed if it was in front of a regular arbitrator, but he had to, you know, appeal in front of Major League Baseball and he knew he wasn't going to win, so he got suspended. So wanted to hear your take on it. I think it's a little overboard with what Major League Baseball is doing right now.
Yeah, and I mean, it's super weird because they made him change his glove, too. A lot of people don't remember that he had to change his glove after, I think, like the first or second inning when he came out and did the check. And then, I just don't understand why he got tossed in the first place. Like, was it because the alcohol made his fingers even stickier? Because that's exactly what he was saying. He was saying that the alcohol, and a lot of people are saying that if you put that whatever alcohol that they made him put on his fingers – is going to take all the water away and is just going to accentuate the stickiness that the rosin is helping the pitchers get. And then also, you know, when are we just going to go to what the Japanese league is using where it's already a tacky baseball right out of the bag? We don't have to use the Mississippi mud or wherever it comes from to try to get a grip on these baseballs. It's just right out of the bag. It's already tacky. It's already got that grip on it for pitchers to use. So why not try that at the AAA level? We love trying different things and different rules in the minor league. So why haven't we tried this out yet? And I think it's just one of those things. It's like, you know, I don't want to say that MLB doesn't care, because if the pitchers can't get a grip on the baseball and they throw it over the plate, it's going to lead to more offense. But that's another conspiracy theory for another time, you know, with all the juice baseballs and whatnot. But it's just, it's coming down to a point now where we have to try to find a substance that we can uniformize. I don't even know if that's a word or not, but, you know, a uniform substance that we can use for the baseball that all pitchers that can use and that everybody's happy with, because one pitcher is going to say, oh, I don't like using rosin because whatever. And another pitcher is like, oh, I have to use rosin because the ball's too slippery. But, you know, we have to find something, some kind of common ground to help these pitchers get a good enough grip on the baseball, because I don't want 99 going at somebody's head because we're not allowed to use rosin anymore. And we just got to go out there with sweat and we just got to wipe it off on our hands. And, you know, now I'm throwing 99 at somebody's head and somebody's out for 10 games with a concussion. So as a somebody that pitched and hated when his fingers got wet because it just felt like I had no grip and I needed to use rosin, and other things sometimes, but that's a different story.
Confidential.
Completely off the record. But, you know, it's just we have to be able to use something. Pitchers have to be able to use something to get some type of tackiness on the baseball.
Yeah, and I don't know if the Japanese league, the tack on the baseball, like, alters with spin rates and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I would assume it does, but I could be wrong. But again, the whole concern of it is, you're right, if the pitchers can't grip the baseball, 99's going to your head. That's the whole point of trying to get a grip on the baseball. These guys, obviously, it's 2023. We look at the numbers. We look at the metrics. Heck, I got TrackMan on my computer every game I do to see spin rates. And now all the broadcasters talk about at the college level, not the minor league level. At the college level, we're all talking about spin rates on every pitch now when we see a curveball. You know, it's just the way the game has gone, and people care about the spin rates a little bit more. Now it's like, you know, I think it's to a point where MLB pitchers have seen the checks enough. This is what, year three, maybe year four of these, you know, consistent inning checks. Like, we don't want to go out there and get banned for 10 games. We want to go out there and not kill somebody. You know, I think that's the mindset that I think pitchers have now. You know, obviously they want to get advantage with whatever they got, but hitting's already hard enough. You know, we don't need injuries in the game, especially to our star players. You know, when you're coming up and in, it's scary. It really is. So, you know, grip's a big thing. I just don't understand why, you know, you can't apply the rosin in the dugout. I really just, I don't understand. Rosin is legal between the lines, but not in the dugouts. Just bizarre to me. And the fact that Phil Cussey's been the one to toss all these guys, I think is also kind of weird from a veteran umpire too. A guy who I feel like should have some feel for the game and should have some understanding is the one who's strictly following the rules. So maybe he's on the brink of some termination because he's trying to follow some rules here, but, you know, definitely don't want to speculate that. But, I mean, come on. We just got to be a little bit better here because this is kind of nuts. Even when they check Domingo Germán, and I'm a Yankees fan, but if you're checking him before an inning like that, he should have been thrown out of the game. I personally thought he shouldn't have been thrown out of the game because rosin is a legal substance once again. And, you know, I understand why Rocco Baldelli wanted to get thrown out because you're checking him at the end of an inning, and then you're checking him right away before he comes out, and you feel something sticky. I understand, but it's rosin. It's legal. We got to figure it out.
Yeah, and I mean, I think MLB won with their sticky stuff, whatever pitchers were using, whether it was just, you know, sunscreen and sweat, spider tack, whatever they were using. I think MLB, you know, got what they wanted because with the amount of checks that are either before an inning, after an inning, you know, if a MLB manager wants to check during an inning, I don't think pitchers can get away with applying sticky substance like they did, you know, 3-4 years ago. So I think MLB's cracked down on that the way they wanted to do. Now we just have to find a common ground, like, okay, we're not going to let you use sunscreen, but we're not going to care about rosin. Or, you know, we're definitely not going to let you use spider tack, but maybe, you know, we'll let you use sunscreen and rosin because it's not kicking up spin rates so much like spider tack and pine tar was. Or, you know, use pine tar because pine tar is something that can get you a grip on the ball, but it's not raising spin rates. But something that you can do in the minor leagues to test this. Like, you can use the minor leagues as a guinea pig like you did with the three rules that they implemented this year. It's like we can do that in the minor leagues. We have the minor leagues for a reason. It's like the same way that the NFL is doing it with the XFL. The XFL is trying out some new rules. So is I forgot what the other league is that's on
Arena
right
Football
now,
League.
But not the Arena Football League. No, it was something else.
Oh, then
it
I have
was,
no idea. I'm a big football guy.
There's another league that's going on right now. I think it might be like a fan controlled league or something like that. But they're utilizing rules in the XFL and this other league for football to see if the NFL wants to take advantage of it. And it's like one of the new rules too is like the kickoff where you kick it off, or the kicker is at the 35 kicking it off, and then instead of guys starting at the 35 with the kicker, they're at the opponent's 30 and the blockers are at the 20 and you're only running 10 yards instead of 30 or 40 yards. So it's like some of those things that you could try in the minor leagues too. Like, is this baseball tacky enough for the pitchers to use without increasing spin rates too much to where now we're hindering all the offense that we were trying to build in with the new rules, with the shift restrictions and the bigger bases and the step-offs and all that other stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree with that on the rosin. So that's that. Peter, if you got the next one, you know, bring it to us if you got anything.
Yeah, so you're a big college guy, and I just watched LSU take on Ole Miss. This was on Friday night, and LSU's Friday night starter, Paul Skenes, This is a dude. I mean, you could talk about Dylan Cruz and how he could possibly be the number one pick, but this is something I have to find out. Is Paul Skenes, is he draft eligible this year?
So he is, it's right? Skenes. Yeah.
Skenes.
I believe he is. I could double check that. But yeah, I actually just – so what I do is, especially with LSU, now that I'm, you know, working in baseball on the weekends, I watch the highlights back because, you know, when you're the number one team in the nation, you get really fortunate enough to get your highlights put on YouTube every night. So let's see. Obviously, the rule in college baseball is, you know, you can play 3 years and then be draft eligible. And keep in mind, he's only 20 years old. This is a young buck.
I think he's draft eligible.
And I think he is draft eligible. Yeah, he's a junior. I mean, he's a transfer from Air Force. I mean, this dude, we'll get into the stats, but off the bat, I mean, this dude throws hard. He's 7-1 right now with a 1.97 ERA. He started 10 games. 115 strikeouts to 12 walks over 59 and a third innings.
I don't know how he's not the first overall pick. Obviously, we don't know who has the first overall pick because it's the first year of the draft lottery. But I don't know how he's not the first pick. I mean, this guy, I mean, him, Dylan Cruz, and then Caglione from Florida, who every time I watch his highlight is hitting a ball 500 feet. And then I'm sure you saw the grand slam where he had the no celebration because his teammate got thrown out the inning before for celebrating too much, which is it's a whole other thing that I have with college
umpires.
That's another
thing we can get into
like
if we
college umpires, in my opinion, have no feel for the game. They don't understand that was a big strikeout, and the guy was just
he didn't do anything wrong.
Uber excited. Yeah, I that's another story for another topic. But I like those two guys, in my opinion, or three guys, are fighting to be the number one pick. But I just don't understand how this guy from LSU is it. You said it's Skenes.
Skenes.
I don't understand how he's not the number one pick. I mean, this guy throws 100 miles an hour, has impeccable command, and I mean, granted, he's on the number one team in the country, so he's going to get a lot more looks than, you know, somebody that's not on the number one team in the country. But I mean, this guy's just having an incredible season. And when I watched him against Ole Miss, you know, a team that won the national championship last year, I mean, he was just going after guys. And it was a great game to watch, and I think he's the best pitcher in the nation right now.
Oh yeah, I mean he's definitely up there with Rhett Lauder of Wake Forest, who I actually had about a month ago when I was still in High Point. But yeah, just for command purposes, over the 59 and a thirds, Skenes has only walked 12 and has hit one. Over those 59 and a third. So he is, I mean, it's so always so hard to tell when it comes to first overall picks for the Major League Baseball draft, just because so much of the scouting is done in high school. And the one worrisome thing with collegiate baseball players, obviously, is their age. You know, drafting an 18-year-old kid is going to be a lot better than drafting a 22-year-old kid. But I got to tell you, Paul Skenes is also a guy who's must-watch TV. Like, if I had to pick a night to watch LSU, it would be Friday. And obviously I know they got, you know, Christian Little starting on Sunday, who's the guy who transferred from Vanderbilt. And I know Thatcher Hurd had been good for a while, just got moved out of the rotation. And I forget who filled in for Thatcher on Saturday, but he threw a complete game against Ole Miss. But Holy. I mean, Paul Skenes, he's throwing 100 miles an hour, and he's starting. Like, remember Ben Joyce last year for Tennessee was throwing 104 and was like, dude had a mean mug on him out of the bullpen. And, like, you know, he got drafted, but he didn't get drafted in the first round. This dude, Paul Skenes, I mean, he's a starter, and, I mean, dude throws hard. And he's a dog. Like, you watch him on the mound, you're like, holy shit. Like, I wouldn't want to face him.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like you're talking about a 22-year-old, too. You're talking about a 20-year-old. So it's like he should be two years removed from high school. He's three. He's 20 years old. He's young. He's moldable. I mean, it's just the way he goes after guys and his pitch sequences and the way that he was just working the corners against Ole Miss was just a sight to behold, because I'll be the first to admit that I do not like watching college pitchers a whole lot, because there's just something about them to where sometimes they just don't know how to command the strike zone. And it's like they don't know how to go after guys, and it's like their sequencing is really weird. But it's like this guy was just, all right, I'm going to dot 100 in the on the inside corner, and then I'm going to dot it at the top of the corner. Now I got you thinking inside, and then I'm going to throw this breaking ball off the outside corner. And I mean, it was rudimentary sequencing, but it was just a thing of beauty, and it's something that I don't see a whole lot in college pitchers. And it was nice to see for a change. It was a good change of pace from other college games that I watched, because I know for a fact so that Florida MLB State Pipeline does not have something like that.
Yeah, no, they are not good this year from what I've watched. So what I was getting into, MLB Pipeline released its 2023 mock draft, and they have Dylan Cruz going number one. This was in December, by the way, so this obviously could change. And we'll just hit quickly on Dylan Cruz, because we already know. Dude is the best hitter not only in the country of college baseball, but I think he's the best hitter on the planet. I mean, the stuff he's doing right now, it's consistent three-hit, four-hit games a night. He's incredible. I think he's hitting over 500, which is nuts. So anyways, Paul Skenes.
Especially in the SEC.
Yeah, that ain't easy. That ain't easy. Paul Skenes was originally slotted with the number 4 overall pick to the Texas Rangers. Granted, now keep in mind, this is before he started at LSU. He was slotted in as the 4th overall pick. He's a transfer from Air Force. He spent a couple years there. So, you know, if this dude's going 7-1 for the number one ranked team in the country, and he was already slotted as the 4th overall pick, I mean, he's moving up. he's moving
could
up,
you,
that's for sure.
Could you imagine if in the last 3 drafts, the Texas Rangers drafted Mark Leiter, Kumar Rocker, Jack Leiter, Kumar Rocker, and now Paul Skenes.
Ugh.
Could you imagine, like, those are your 3 guys that are just waiting in the minors to join a rotation possibly in the next 2 years that could still have Jacob DeGrom on it?
I think it's just the right thing to do, like, draft out of the SEC, because SEC baseball is literally the pinnacle of college baseball. Like, as much as I'm an ACC guy and I love the ACC, the SEC is just, like, it gets the most coverage. You know, there's always at least one team in there that's going to Omaha. Like, LSU, like, again, as much as I don't like the fact of what they did, you know, they loaded up in the transfer portal. They got Tommy White. They got Christian Little. You know, yada, 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 whatever. Paul Skenes, for heck's sake. They're good. Like, they're just way too good. And it's fun. It's a fun watch. Now, I will say, my boys, the Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns, did beat them the other couple weeks ago, which was cool to see. But still, I mean, this team, number one team in the country, you know, I know college baseball, I wouldn't say is a strong suit for both of us. I'm definitely very much into the college game. But if I had to recommend a team to go watch, Wheels is a very popular channel on YouTube for highlights. That's what I watched this morning. I watched the LSU and I watched Wake Forest as well, because they are a juggernaut.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to you too. I was like, I definitely want to get more into college baseball. Like, I'll watch it during Omaha time or, you know, super regional time and stuff like that in Omaha. But, like, you know, LSU is turned me into one of those guys that I'm starting to watch. Just like I said, I watched the Ole Miss game, you know, so, like, watching just midweeks just seeing how this team plays. It's like LSU is one of those teams that's like turned me into like, oh, I got to start watching more college baseball during the regular season and not just so much during the postseason.
Yeah, postseason college baseball is so much fun. So much fun. And, you know, during the regular season too, like, look at that crowd that Ole Miss had this weekend. You got the student section out in the outfield, you know, flipping their beers in the air when a home run gets hit. I mean, that's cool. Like, that's stuff that doesn't happen in the major leagues. That's why I always say, like, you know, if there's a place I got to watch a college baseball game, like, if there's bucket list, obviously going to Omaha is going to be a little hurtful to the wallet. But if there's something I got to do, bucket list ballparks, I mean, LSU's definitely up there. Tennessee's definitely up there as well. I mean, those atmospheres are just so sick.
And I mean, you talk about too, like atmospheres during postseason baseball. I still remember, you know, when we were at the Hooters that one time for the watch party, we were watching Tennessee versus Notre Dame. And that game went into extras and Notre Dame ended up winning it and going to Omaha. But we were just like, oh my God, like that's electric. Like we were just like, we were watching that game more than we were watching the Rays game.
Yeah.
Like we didn't care about being there for the watch party for what we were supposed to be at. We were like, oh, let's watch the Tennessee Notre Dame game.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's just so much fun. It's cool to see like the fun that gets had in college sports, which I guess can translate to that ejection from Florida. I mean, you know, college baseball, you know, I wear the hat, you know, Brett Phillips' baseball is fun. You know, I wear that all the time. Steve Schock, who's, you know, the most popular Twitter guy when it comes to college baseball, just came out with a hat that says college baseball is rad. Thought it was interesting. Haven't bought it yet. Sorry, Steve. But no, like college baseball's fun. They banned all the props this year, which I thought was really disappointing. And now, you know, you get a guy who gets fired up after a strikeout. It didn't even look like he said a swear word and gets thrown out of the game. Just bizarre. And I thought Jack Caglione, just an absolute baller for doing what he did. Hit a grand slam and just speed walk across the plate with a plain face and no reaction was just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's college. You got 18-year-olds, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. It's like that's the league that, you know, if MLB wants to police everything and you can't have fun in that league, whatever. But it's like college should be about showing emotion and like these are dream schools of some, like, you know, people dream about playing at LSU, people dream about playing at Florida and playing for a national championship and competing for one and you know, striking out the side with when they come in with bases loaded to get somebody out of a jam. It's like you got to let them have some emotion and play with that chip on their shoulder. And I mean, look at what happened with the Louisville pitcher the last couple of years ago. I forgot who it was, but he pitched against I think it was Vanderbilt, where they're just like jawing back and forth, like that was great. And then like he comes out, and then all of a sudden Vanderbilt puts up three or four in that inning, and they go on to win that game, and it's like they're just jawing back. That's what college baseball is. It's about the little chirps going back and forth with somebody, with the other team, and it's about just like trying to get into somebody's head. It's about, you know, momentum shifts and just like that's why I think college umpires are one of those. There's some of the umpires that just have no feel, like they don't understand big moments and when they happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, you played for Southeastern, which is, you know, one of the best NAIs in the country. You know, I mostly call, you know, college baseball, but I played club ball too in college. And that's the number one fun thing is the chirping. Like when people are like, oh, what level should our crowd mic be in a college baseball game? Turn that baby up. Like it is, you hear some good ones. And it's just like the rowdiness in the that comes from the dugouts into the stands too. Like that's what makes it fun also. Like there's some ballparks that, you know, they don't get the biggest crowds in the world, but it sounds loud because you got both teams in the dugout jawing. It's fun. So I suggest, and you know, I'm fairly new to watching college baseball. I've only really been watching it religiously for, I guess you could say this is my second season really. You know, I know you're trying to get into it too. It's just the atmosphere of college baseball is really what makes it. And I really hope umpires, you know, can stop killing that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's frustrating sometimes to watch when, like, the umpires are trying to police the game. And it's like, baseball is very much players policing players. And it's like when you got umpires doing that for you, it kind of takes away from it's like, all right, this guy's been chirping me the whole game, so I'm going to throw a little high and in. And it's like, get him off the plate, let him know whose plate it is, and then I'm going to just strike him out. And when I strike him out, I'm going to give him a stare down and let him know who's his daddy. It's like, I don't know.
Gotta let him know who's boss. It's weird. It's what it's about.
Yeah. And he didn't even say anything malicious. He kind of just flexed at the batter, like after he struck him out and walked off the mound. It's whatever. I'm done with it. I'm over it. I'm over college umpires.
Next. Yeah, you know. So I think. I don't know. I mean, this is a pretty good start. I think. You know, we covered a lot of ground. I think, you know, rosin was a big topic, obviously. And I think, you know, we'll start getting into more stuff as we continue on the podcast. You know, I'm all out of it. You know, I think it's been a good first month, good first month of Major League Baseball thus far. College baseball starting to wind down, which it's about to get really exciting once we get towards late May and the beginning of June. I think it's really good. Some really notable ranked teams that are in there that are really exciting, including the Campbell Fighting Camels, which I won't say anymore because they are the rivals of my guys. So I won't say any more about them. But really fun college baseball season coming. You know, I text back and forth with people. You know, when I did Northwoods League in 2021, you form a lot of connections in the college game and how intense it gets. And, you know, me and my buddy were having a debate over text about if Louisiana Lafayette or Coastal Carolina was going to win the Sun Belt. And like, and 3 years ago, if you would have told me that's a text message fight I would have gotten into, I would have thought you were crazy. But, you know, that's just how fun it's gotten watching college baseball. You see all these random teams and, you know, Coastal Carolina, obviously notable program, and the Raging Cajuns are fun. So, yeah, you know, I think if you're a guy who's not really into college baseball, highly suggest watching it, especially like mid-majors too, like A-Sun, A-10, you know, really good stuff going on in those two. So, yeah, I think we're off to a good start. I mean, you got anything?
No, but how about Tennessee sweeping Vanderbilt this last weekend and one of those games being 17-1 in 7 innings? Like that's college baseball.
Yeah, those were the highlights.
Tennessee's 6-10 in conference or 6-12 in conference, whatever they were. They were losing 2 out of 3 to every team. And then all of a sudden the number 5 team comes in and is like, all right, well, you know, we're just gonna sweep you. And we're gonna outscore you by like 30 runs.
Yeah, I thought it was those were actually just the highlights before I got on here. I was just watching that series before I got on here and good for Tony V. I mean, if there's a notable manager in college baseball you should keep your eyes on for being fiery, like, it's Tony V. I mean, Tony V kind of looks like you, except with just a few more years of age. Just being honest, you know, he's a younger manager. He's got that fire.
I'll take that.
His team is 6-10 in SEC, which is not ideal for Tennessee. We all thought they were going to be, you know, a top 4 team in the nation.
They were top 5 at one point.
I know the rankings probably came out a little while ago, and we could, you know, search for them if we want to. But yeah, you know, Tony V's already been suspended.
I think last time I saw they were 15.
That sounds about right. No, Vanderbilt's at 5. Tennessee. I'm not seeing Tennessee on here. Unless I'm blind, which is very possible.
I saw it on Twitter, and it was like a Division I. Let's see, college baseball. Here we go. College Baseball Nation dropped their top 10, or their top 25, I should say. And they had Tennessee at number 13. They had them going back in. I don't know if you follow them on Twitter or not.
I don't. I got D1 baseball and NCAA baseball, and I'm on the NCAA page right now, which is like the official ones. Like when you see the bugs on ESPN, like those are the ones with the numbers. And Tennessee ain't on here, which is odd.
So then I was just looking at. I guess it's College Baseball Nation's top 50 that they do it for week 10. Like, and yeah.
Yeah, there's so many. You know, Tennessee's a good team. The NCAA will get them in the rankings eventually, but you know, they're another exciting team to watch when they're fully healthy. I know they lost some guys last year due to, you know, graduating and going to the draft or whatever, but you know, it's a fun college baseball season. But Tennessee over Vandy. I mean, Vandy's what, the 15th ranked team in the nation, and obviously we know how good their program is. And Enrique Bradfield, I mean, I think he might be the fastest man on the planet. He's, in my opinion, the most exciting player to watch in all of college baseball, because you know, like, anything that's put on the ground, there's a really good chance that he beats it out, even if it's a little dribbler to the second baseman. It's just fun. Like, that's what it is. Like, these young guns coming out and playing college baseball is just fun. It's louder, and it's not just because they use metal. It's just fun.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, there's so many more players to make up so many more different things that guys can do. You have so many more role players on a team that can make a game exciting, whereas, you know, maybe in the major leagues you got your two stars, and then you might have a lineup that doesn't have a whole bunch of different role players. But in college, you can have 5, 6, 7 stars, you know, with two role players and just guys that just make the game so much more exciting. Like LSU, they didn't have to add Tommy Tanks, but they did. And it's like, he was another star that was with NC State last year, and now he comes over to LSU. Same thing with Skins. You know, he's with Air Force. He was a star there. Now he's a star with LSU. So it's like, you have Dylan Cruz. You know, you have so many more stars in college baseball. And that's the other thing, that too, that I wish they would kind of showcase a little bit more, especially with college baseball being on ESPN. You know, give them the same treatment that you give college basketball. Because I think if you gave college baseball the college basketball treatment, it could be a lot of fun. And like, don't just throw it on ESPN Plus where people have to buy for it or pay for it. And don't just throw one game on ESPN Plus. Like the LSU Ole Miss game, we watched a little bit of it on SEC Network. But then at the top of the hour, they were going to take it off and they were going to go to SEC Now. And then you had to go to the app to watch the rest of the game. It's like, no, just keep it on SEC Network. This is the number one team in the country. You got the number one pitcher in the country. You probably got the number one pick of the entire country. It's like, leave it on SEC Network and just let the game play out. Do SEC Now whenever, or just cut it. Like give it the college basketball treatment, because I guarantee you that if LSU and Ole Miss were playing college basketball on SEC Network, they wouldn't be cutting away to SEC Now, you know, or if like two and six SEC football teams we're playing on SEC Network, they want to cut it out. They would just let it run. It's like, so give college baseball the same treatment that you give college basketball, and watch how much the sport grows.
I 100% agree. And I know they try and favor to the East Coast and whatever and all that nonsense. But, you know, like I said, this is the future of the game. And not only is it the future of the game, and, you know, I understand, like, College World Series – it's played in Omaha. It's during Major League Baseball season. So I get it. But come on. Like, these are the top teams in the nation. This is probably, and again, I don't know the history of LSU and Wake Forest and all these teams, but these are probably the best versions of these teams ever. And the only way you could see them is by paying for a subscription. Now, granted, I was on ESPN Plus for a long time, so I thank you for paying for that subscription. But it comes a point where, like, LSU should be showcased, especially when they're playing a team like Ole Miss, when they're playing a team like Vandy, when they're playing a team like Tennessee. People know those programs. They're good. They got some guys that, you know, you ask a general college baseball fan around the country, name two players on each of these teams, and they can figure it out, you know. I completely agree with you. I think it's actually something I was joking with a buddy a couple months ago, how, like, you know, if one of those networks just – separated itself and went college baseball focused and had it on national TV, it'd be a pretty big moneymaker.
Like, I know this time of year is difficult with the basketball playoffs and everything, and the hockey playoffs, but like, ESPN2 doesn't have any of the playoff games. So why not have some of these games televised on ESPN2? Because I know a lot of people get ESPN2 when they buy ESPN or the whatever cable package they get for ESPN. So it's very easy. It's very simple. Come on, ESPN. Let's go. Let's go to Bristol, talk to the powers that be, and we'll get college baseball the number two watch sport in history.
Yeah, we can stomp on there and be like, this is who we are. We're the young lads. We came from the Rays. And this is what we got because we like college baseball. And as Steve Schock says, college baseball is rad. And we want ESPN to keep going with the trend that it is rad. So help us out here, please. And for them, for better sake, it's business. We win because we get to watch baseball. And ESPN wins because they get to make a lot of money. I'm for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't have to televise every game, but if you have like a 1 versus 5 or a, you know, a 14 versus 15, it's like play the ranked games then. You're still going to have a bunch of teams playing each other that are ranked, especially in the SEC. If you just show SEC games, you're bound to get, you know, 3 or 4 ranked games every week.
Looking at the LSU baseball schedule here, that's why I'm looking down and trying to see if there's a series or even a game where I would really be interested to watch that I would hope would be on national television. So what's today? We are recording on Monday. This is April the 24th. So they play tomorrow against...
They only have a couple more.
Yeah, I mean, regular season's almost done. They play Alabama this upcoming weekend. In Baton Rouge, and Bama was ranked at one point. They got an all right team. I mean, not all right. They're obviously great, but you know. Then, first weekend in May, they play Auburn. This is LSU, that is. And then they play Mississippi State the following weekend, but Mississippi State has been pretty bad lately. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely a couple games I'd love to see, but you know, if you don't subscribe, you can't see them.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't play maybe like the preseason stuff where they're not in conference, but just play the hits, play the conference games, play the big games, play the LSU versus Vandy, play the Vandys versus Tennessee. You know, you got two great programs like that. Play the, you know, Florida State versus Florida games that they do, you know, Miami versus Wake Forest, you know, just, you know, if you play the hits, you know, you don't have to give away, I guess, the farm. For ESPN, where now they're just constantly stuck with college baseball, you can still play, you know, your NBA playoff games on ESPN, but you could play conference games that have a little juice to them. If Florida State plays Miami, you know that they're rivals. Play that. Play the Friday game. Play the Sunday afternoon game, or play the Saturday night game when you don't have a basketball game that's going on or something like that. It's just, you know, you can have better programming, or I shouldn't say better program, but you can expand the audience. You have the ability to expand the audience because ESPN runs college sports.
If you build it, they'll come.
Exactly.
That's the line right there. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, I agree with everything on the college baseball side. Glad you're getting into it. Starting to get to a good time there. You know, I think, you know, where we're at, we're over an hour. I think this is a pretty good start for what we got coming. We plan on bringing on maybe some guests at times, you know, maybe we can get good old Becca Carney on here. You know, we could maybe, you know, we could do something, but, yeah, you know, again, you know, if you listen to the intro or want to go back to the intro, you know, this is who we are. You know, we're two guys who, you know, we're pretty lucky to be in the situations that we were in last year to work with a major league radio broadcast team, which is really awesome. And they have big influence on us. And, you know, we'll always be with them because that's a close group as well. We'll always be fans of theirs. And, you know, we're just trying to, you know, do something fun to stay in the know. And I think that's something that's really important that people, I guess, not just, you know, in sports, but in life or, you know, they fail to do sometimes is find a way to stay in touch with people that they work with in the past. And, you know, I think we're off to a good start here.
Yeah. And I mean, if anything, this is just something for us to have a little fun doing too. Just talk a little baseball, you know, college and pros. And, you know, maybe we get an Andy Freed on here or a Neil Solons one time just to talk some Rays baseball or just some baseball in general. Cause those guys are pretty knowledgeable about the game. We'll talk to Andy Freed about his 70s Orioles, maybe some Cal Ripken, see if he's got a story about that.
Yeah, you always mentioned the story about how he was – I think he was talking to Cal and got his hair brushed back, and that was his first real experience in the interviews, just kind of getting their hair brushed back. So, yeah, always cool to hear from guys of that caliber. It's just so awesome and so fortunate to have them as contacts for us, and hopefully we can get them on. I know they're very busy, long season, packed season, but yeah, I think this'll do it for episode one, I guess. If we got anything, what we do need to do, we need to start incorporating is we got to bring back question of the day, because those were a hoot in the office. And, you know, once we get this thing rolling a little bit, I think we can definitely incorporate that as well at some point. So I don't got anything today, but maybe I'll get something for next week. If you got something on the fly, go for it. But yeah, I'll let you take us out.
I have nothing, but I mean, this is going to be fun. I think we're really going to enjoy this. We're going to probably try to do this every Monday for our audience, though, you know, depending on how many people that is that listen to us. But, you know, every Monday you have off from calling minor league games. So I'm still going to try to listen into some of those games. I know I haven't been the best of friend in listening into those games. I listened to a little bit of High Point.
Hey, that's okay. It's early. It's
Peoria Chief. Very early. Yeah. Once we get into May and everything, and I, you know, we get into the big time games, I'll start listening to some Peoria Chief baseball with Harris Eisenberg. But I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to try to keep this about an hour or so of a podcast, because after that we can kind of just ramble on, and I think we're just going to lose a lot of the audience members who, you know, might not have the biggest attention
probably
span.
Start talking about like
when it comes to just listening to baseball,
dining and chicken wings.
We could have separate episodes just for the media dining and going to the Hooters like 10 times for watch parties and stuff like that. We could have separate episodes just for that. But no, I think this is a good intro video just for to hear our voices, or have the audience hear our voices and hear what we're about, and kind of meet us a little bit. And yeah, Harris, I'm excited to see where this thing's going to go.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Something we wanted to get started for a while, and we're in with one. It starts with one. So off to a good start here. And yeah, plan on doing this every Monday, because, you know, that's a big off day for me. And yeah, let's just keep this thing rolling, baby. We'll just keep churning these out whenever we get the chance to. So yeah, that is episode one of the Young Lads podcast with Harris and Peter. And yeah, hope you learned something. Hope you think that baseball's fun, especially college baseball being rad, according to Steve Schock. And hope you tune into episode two.
Yeah, so for Harris Eisenberg, I'm Peter DeFee saying so long on the Young Lads podcast, and we look forward to talking to you again next Monday.